Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the workshop, you will hear from our panel of expert speakers. We will allow time for questions and comments following the presentation. Instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. And as a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Senior Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Dr. Messner, please go ahead.
Oh, thank you so much, Krista. And I, too, would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Connect Education Workshop. And today's program is titled The Role of Nutrition, Exercise, and Meditation in Coping with Myeloproliferative Neoplasms, or MPNs. And this is part three of Living with Myeloproliferative Neoplasms, or MPNs. And today's program is supported by GlaxoSmithKline and an educational grant from Morphosis US, Inc., and I really want to thank them for their support to this program. Now, before I introduce our first speaker, I just want to say a few words about how many of you are on the call today, where you're from. So most of you are from the United States, from both urban, rural, and suburban areas. We have over 200 participants on the call today. And we also have international participants from Canada, Nepal, Romania, and the United Kingdom. So it's a bit of a global call as well. Well, it is a global call, actually. These are very diverse countries that we are attracting to this program today. And it's really wonderful to have all of you on the call today. We're delighted that you're participating in this program today. And now it is my great pleasure to introduce our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Christina Gowan. And Dr. Gowan is Associate Professor of Medicine, Division of Hematology and Oncology, Program Director, Hematology Oncology Fellowship Program, Founder Director, Integrative Medicine and Hematology Oncology Fellowship, University of Arizona College of Medicine, Tucson, Arizona. And Dr. Gowan will be addressing a number of topics. The first is overview of MPN-related weight changes. Secondly, causes of your weight loss or weight gain. Third, strategies for managing your weight. Fourth, common weight-related eating and hydration questions to ask your doctor and healthcare team. And five, how meditation and integrative medicine may help you cope. It is my great pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Gowan.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Messner. It's always such an honor to be part of these wonderful programs. And so I welcome everyone who has called in and is joining today. And I really want to honor taking a moment to really educate yourself and to arm yourself with the knowledge and tools to move forward and to really advocate for your health and wellness. So kudos to you all for calling and joining. So today we have the honor of really talking about what I think is a really important issue in myeloproliferative neoplasms. And when we say MPNs, I think many of you have probably already heard many of the calls leading up to today. But MPN is a constellation and an umbrella term of many different disorders, so essential thrombocythemia, polycythemia vera, and myelofibrosis. And so we'll really be talking about all of these different entities. And I will say there are many similarities, but also differences within these. And so we know for ET patients and PV patients, we're really more looking at how do we manage obesity, how do we manage being overweight, and how do we talk about some strategies to keep everyone at a healthy weight for feeling their best and also having their best disease outcomes. For those with myelofibrosis, obesity may in fact still be an issue in overweight, but in many folks, it's really weight loss and cancer cachexia. And so there's really different treatment strategies and thought processes that we need to think about and really educate differently based on these different processes. So let's back up for a moment and let's talk a little bit about just some definitions. So how do we define overweight and obesity? Well, we use a body mass index, and many of you have probably heard of this BMI, and it's really a screening tool for being overweight or obese. And so the definition for adults is a person with a BMI of 25 to 29.9 is truly considered to be overweight, and 30 or higher is obese. And so I do think it is really good to understand where we as individuals really land on this BMI screening scale. And then if we're less than 25, then that's underweight. We do also know that we are in an obesity epidemic, right? And it's not only relevant to MPN disease, but many different cancers. If you go to the CDC website and you look at this really beautiful graph that talks about the 13 different associated cancers that are truly evidence-based to be associated with being overweight or obese, and that's breast, GI tumors, ovarian cancers, and the only one for hematologic disease that has the most robust data to really say it's obesity-related is actually multiple myeloma. But there is rising data that there's increased risk in obese populations for MPNs. What we also know is that more than 600,000 obesity-associated cancers occur in the United States each year, including more than 200,000 among men and over 400,000 among women, primarily because of that breast cancer incidence. So managing weight is not only important for MPNs, but also for secondary prevention of other cancers. So critically important. We know that even within our cancer management guidelines as doctors, we go to NCCN, that's the National Cancer Care Network. And within that, it helps us to guide how we treat patients. And within those guidelines for MPNs, it says manage cardiovascular risk factors, because we also know that one of the biggest risks for MPNs is really blood clots, heart attacks, strokes. And so all of those are really managed through managing much of our cardiovascular risk, and that is weight management. So critically important. How many folks are really associated with obesity? Well, in an international study that I had the privilege to collaborate on, we had 858 patients with MPNs participate over 52 countries, and we found that at least 33% or more were overweight. And so it really is an issue that it's very important, but I also think it is an opportunity because it is something that we can all do and work on together that's outside of pharmacologics, right? It's something that you can do as patients and as caregivers to truly be proactive in your therapeutic plan. We also know that in folks with diagnosed MPNs that being underweight or overweight, either ends of the spectrum, can actually be associated with a higher symptom burden. And many of you have probably heard of this whole terminology of symptom burden in MPN. So we are treating your disease not only to manage your blood counts, but also your symptoms and how you feel. My goodness, that is so important. And we see, again, those that are underweight or overweight have a higher symptom burden. So by managing weight, you may in fact feel better. Now, when we're thinking about MPNs, there are many different things that can cause abnormalities within the weight. We know that some of our most frequently used therapeutics are our JAK inhibitors. Many of you have heard of the JAK inhibitors. We have four of them on the market. Ruxolitinib was the first approved. And I'll tell you, when I go to patient care conferences at the end, many patients will run up to me and say, Dr. Gowan, I love my JAK inhibitor. I have never had better count control. My spleen is reduced. And I feel really great, but oh my gosh, this weight gain. And I do hear that quite a bit. And so that is one of the side effects that's associated with the STRA class. A couple of different mechanisms we think that's related to. We think, and this is a good thing in many ways, but a reduction in the inflammatory cytokines. But by reducing that inflammatory cytokine milieu, you may feel better, you may have better appetite, and thus put on some more weight. We also know that it potentially is modulating a hormone called leptin. Leptin is a hormone produced by the fat cells in response to sufficient caloric intake. And that JAK-STAT signaling that the JAK inhibitors are modulating is really a key downstream pathway for this leptin. And so JAK inhibitors can actually interrupt that normal hormonal feedback mechanism leading to weight gain. So certainly medications are potentially contributing to the weight gain. And I think it's really important to talk about this with your provider when you're starting on a JAK inhibitor, if you're new to start. What are the strategies to really be proactive to kind of stave off this associated weight gain? We also know, again going back to MPN symptom burden, that symptom burden can be really impactful, can really cause a significant amount of fatigue, a significant amount of inactivity secondary to that fatigue, depression, and many other symptom sequelae that make physical activity hard, right? Not only hard physically, but hard spiritually and emotionally. It's hard to get up and go just because you're so down. And so that's important as well to talk about how do we mitigate all of those different symptoms to really enhance the possibility of success for managing weight, right? Are we managing fatigue? Are we managing depression and those kinds of things? And certainly, looking at the whole medical picture, right? Are you anemic? Is your thyroid function low? All of these things really play in to making sure that you can be successful in your weight and your healthy weight journey. What about weight loss? So on the flip side, and so unexplained weight loss and what we call cachexia are truly key hallmarks of advanced MPNs. So things like advanced myelofibrosis, MPN blast phase, acute myeloid leukemia, these are all associated typically, although being overweight can exist within these populations, weight loss is also prominent. And this can be really disturbing for patients and caregivers alike. And I can't tell you how many loved ones hold my hand and are in tears saying, I can't get my husband to eat. And he's losing weight and I see him withering. And it just is such a painful experience for patients and their loved ones in many cases. So I think this, again, is so, so important to address not only with the patient and to give some strategies to help maintain weight, but also with the loved ones, their caregivers, that this is really a family issue. Because for so many of us, food is love. Food is is our love language, right? We want to feed our family and our loved ones with the foods they love and nurture them. And when we do not have the ability to do that, it can be very painful. So I think there's a lot of angles around the weight loss that really have to be addressed. So having kind of painted the landscape of the NPN weight issues, but being both ends of the spectrum, let's talk about some strategies and really get into the weeds here a little bit. And I Love the definition of integrative medicine. I think this is an emerging field within cancer care, and most large academic cancer institutions will now have integrative medicine centers. And so I definitely encourage everyone to look around and look for the resources around you. And there's many that are delivered even via telehealth, and so you can look for a telehealth provider in your state. But let me share with you what the definition of integrative medicine is, and really integrative oncology. It's a patient-centered, evidence-informed field of cancer care that utilizes mind-body practices, natural products, and lifestyle modifications along different traditions, alongside conventional cancer treatments. And that's the difference between alternative or complementary versus integrative, where it's truly alongside, that we're still working with our traditional medical providers and doing everything we can from a traditional standpoint, evidence-based and precision medicine. Integrative oncology truly aims to optimize health, quality of life, clinical outcomes across the cancer care continuum, and to empower people to prevent cancer and become active participants before, during, and beyond cancer treatment. And I love that empowerment piece, because that is truly the magic, I believe, in integrative medicine, is that it does empower you and caregivers to do something proactive, and that is really a wonderful power to have. In clinic, when I see patients in my integrative medicine clinic, we talk about four pillars of health and wellness, and that's really care of the body, which is lifestyle medicine, care of the mind, which is stress reduction, promotion of meaning and connection, and the fourth pillar is truly joy, and I love this pillar. It's promoting happiness and gratitude. And what do we think all of these pillars are really doing? And it's really getting to the heart of inflammation and hopefully cooling inflammation. And inflammation, we know, is one of the things that makes a cancer cell a cancer cell. And we have this really critical landmark paper that was published back in 2011 called The Hallmarks of Cancer. And it's really tumor-promoting inflammation is one of these hallmarks. And what I think is so critical to understand about inflammation is that we can control many of the factors that promote inflammation, such as obesity, smoking, alcohol, environmental pollutants. All of these really are really promoting inflammation. So getting back to our topic today, obesity can certainly promote inflammation. What do we know about MPNs and inflammation? Well, we know that MPNs and inflammation has a higher risk of major thrombosis in populations that have higher levels of inflammation. We also know that there's a shortened leukemia-free survival, meaning that the time that a diagnosis of MPN to acute myeloid leukemia is shorter with more inflammation around. So it behooves us, it's really for all of us, not just those with MPNs, everyone, caregivers too, that we want to modulate our inflammation, right? We really need to be doing that for ourselves, and how do we do that? And it's really, I think, the backbone of that anyway is lifestyle medicine, and that's really nutrition and exercise. Earlier in the call, I had mentioned that one of our major goals in MPNs is to modulate cardiovascular risk. And so I love to talk about this study. It's called the PREDIMED study, and it is really looking at the benefits of a Mediterranean diet in over 7,000 high-risk cardiovascular disease patients. And in the study, those folks that were eating more of the Mediterranean diet, more quartiles, then they actually had decreased risk of cardiovascular events and cardiovascular death. Significantly so. as well as their blood really demonstrated lower markers of inflammation. So we think that impact was modulated through inflammation. I also love, because of course, here's my bias and my disclosure. I'm from the University of Arizona, and I did the Andrew Weil Center of Integrative Medicine fellowship here, but they do have a really lovely anti-inflammatory food pyramid. And so I recommend you all check it out. But basically, it's a Mediterranean diet. And so I can go over just the nuts and bolts of that quickly. It's really at the base of vegetables and fruits, more veggies than fruits. You really want to have all of the colors of the rainbow and lots of variety in your vegetables, and really rotate, and rotate it seasonally, I like to recommend. For your fruits, lots of color as well, looking for low glycemic fruits, particularly berries, really rich in your flavonoids, so daily berries can be wonderful. Whole cracked grains and pastas, really things that are brown, things that you can separate are wonderful. Omega-3 fatty acids, so oh my goodness, this is so critically important. And if you're not a fish person and are not consuming fish, then you might even want to consider a supplement here. But wild caught salmon, sardines, cold water fish essentially, and you want to have that at 2 to 3 times per week. Other sources are walnuts, chia seeds, hemp hearts, ground flax. These are all wonderful things to incorporate over some oats in the morning or a salad or in a smoothie. Whole soy foods has made the pyramid. Cooked Asian mushrooms is really interesting. I love this component. We have not looked at the direct impact. I need to do this in MPNs for Asian mushrooms, but there are many different studies looking at the impact of a component in an Asian mushroom, which is, by the way, something like shiitake or maitake, the aki mushrooms, not your traditional grocery store portobello or cremini's, but really within the cell wall is a beta-D-glucan. And this can stimulate the immune system and cause a more robust response against tumor cells and, in general, a healthier immune system. So I recommend, you know, food as medicine. Why not eat a few Asian mushrooms a couple of times per week? Lots of herbs and spices, green tea and other teas are really rich in flavonoids, so continuing to sip along those, and you can still get the benefits of those even if it's decaf. And then healthy sweets in moderation, love dark chocolate, 70% cacao. Now, when we're talking about MPNs and weight management, you know, again, thinking about both ends of the spectrum. And so for obese patients, we're really aiming for, again, weight loss. It's really about looking at the caloric content, right? Being sure that you're doing a calorie count and that you're not exceeding what's going in versus what's going out. Very simple kind of mathematics there, although it's not that simple, but really focusing on that calorie count, and some apps out there can be helpful to do that, and working with a nutritionist. For folks that are having weight loss, strategies are, and we just talk about fats. Some of the healthiest fats are really olive oil, avocado. So one of the tricks I have for my patients who are really trying to up their calorie content and having some weight loss is just to really drizzle olive oil over everything, soups and pastas, but whatever it is that they're eating, vegetables, you can almost drizzle olive oil over everything. You can even put it in a smoothie and hide it and not taste it much. Also, avocados are wonderful, nut butters. These are really calorically dense, easy things to get down to help with getting that calorie count up. We also really want to focus on protein and those that are losing weight or having cancer-associated cachexia. And in general, the protein requirement is 1 to 1.5 grams per kilogram per day. This can be adjusted if there's problems within the kidneys. But again, really focusing on that protein is quite important. Okay, so what about physical activity? And We know that patients who are moving feel better and do better. And so it's so critically important to get up and get moving. We know that for fatigue, which is one of the worst symptoms and the most prevalent symptoms in MPN patients, is that actually movement is the best medicine, that exercise really helps to eliminate or at least alleviate cancer-associated fatigue. So however you can get up and get moving, the recommendation is from the American Cancer Society, 150 to 300 minutes of moderate intensity or 75 to 150 minutes of vigorous intensity exercise weekly. And I really love to get the three different kinds of exercise in. And so that's the cardiovascular, strength, and flexibility or meditative movement. So really trying to get a balance of those three modalities in your exercise regimen every week. We did a study looking at yoga in particular for MPNs. And we saw that not only was it feasible and with modifications, even those with massive splenomegaly were able to do some yoga interventions, but it was actually modulating, again, inflammation. Tumor necrosis factor alpha was lower in folks doing yoga. And so yoga is definitely recommended. And when you look at the American Society of Clinical Oncology guidelines, yoga is one of the most commonly recommended modalities for managing many different symptoms. What are some other strategies? And so getting back again to the critically important need for modulating inflammation. And inflammation often comes from ourselves, from within, and that is from our stress that we carry. We know that in times of stress, we are pumping out all kinds of hormones and neurotransmitters, things like cortisol, norepinephrine, epinephrine. And what's happening is that around cancer cells, the whole environment is changing. Cancer cells are growing faster, moving faster, are growing more blood vessels, and the immune system is dampened all around the stressed environment. We also know that so many of us run through this kind of evolutionarily kind of programmed response within our brain. So many of us are running our processes through the midbrain, essentially where it's kind of fight or flight. Say if you saw a bear, you are going to fight the bear or run from the bear. And that has been programmed into us for many, many different generations. And the truth is many of us are processing our world experience through that. And again, dumping all of these hormones into our bloodstream. And so the key is to move away from that fight or flight response and go towards a more relaxation pattern. And different ways to do that, and certainly meditation and mindfulness are some of the most potent ways to do that. And so I encourage you all to go out and see what are the resources out there around you in your community to start getting some of these skills, skills for mindfulness, mindfulness-based stress reduction. That really comes, the father of that is Jon Kabat-Zinn, lots of different books out there, websites, and training programs. There's a lot of different apps out there as well, so get on your smartphone and see meditation apps. Many different pop up, and it takes only 5 to 10 minutes per day to truly begin to remap the anatomy of your brain away from that midbrain and into the outer cortexes. So that's everyone's homework, is to go and experiment there. There's lots of other breathing techniques, which I love. I love 4-7-8 breathing, if anybody's heard of that. You can Google that, and many different YouTube videos pop up. And it's as simple as it sounds. You breathe in for the count of 4, you hold that for the count of 7, and you breathe out for the count of 8, and you do that 4 times, and it literally takes 30 seconds, but my goodness, That really has the capacity to change the stress response you're in. And so general strategies, again, as we're wrapping up this conversation around weight management and MPNs, is, oh my goodness, it's a very important topic. I really encourage conversation with the healthcare team, working with an exercise team, rehab, and rehabilitation and exercise teams are wonderful, nutrition teams, and critically important is to talk to the medical team both about weight gain and weight loss so that they can keep that in mind in the perspective of the traditional medical therapies. Really important to engage family and friends when you're shopping at the supermarket to stay around the perimeter and to stay away from the mid area where all the processed foods are. Try to make it fun, so incredibly important. So keep it fresh, keep it new. And then take-home points are really to eat intentionally, to move often, to breathe, to manage your stress, and to cultivate your joy. So have daily joyful practices that really bring meaning and gratitude into your life that helps to manage stress. And so I will end there because, my goodness, I could probably talk for a whole hour on all this. And I welcome questions. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Gowan. That was really stellar, just an outstanding presentation. And you really set the tone for today's program. And I know there'll be lots of questions for you during the Q&A. So thank you so very much for this just a lovely presentation, just incredible. And our next speaker is Dr. Elizabeth O'Donnell. And Dr. O'Donnell is Clinical Director for Early Detection and Prevention of Cancer, Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, Assistant Professor of Medicine, Harvard Medical School. And Dr. O'Donnell will be addressing benefits of physical activity with practical tips and guidelines to prepare for appointments with your doctor, including a prepared list of questions, follow-up care, and discussion of open notes. It's really my great pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. O'Donnell.
Good afternoon, and thank you so much for the invitation to join you today. I will be discussing a couple different topics, starting with physical activity and then also discussing preparation and optimizing medical healthcare visits. So to begin with, thinking about physical activity, one of the really important takeaways from today, I hope you'll recognize, is that trying to integrate physical activity into your care is really about two things. One, finding activities that you enjoy that will help you feel better, and also avoiding inactivity. So, you know, people talk about exercise, and that means different things to different people. And really what we're most focusing on is, you know, trying to stay active. So engaging in your activities of daily living, doing activities that support remaining functional, independent, and confident in your physical presence. Exercise can take on a variety of shapes and interpretations, whether it be, going for a long walk, doing yoga, or something more rigorous that we associate, like exercises such as running or biking. And, you know, it doesn't need to be extremes of exercise. Really, it's about finding activities that keep you moving, trying to move at intermediate intensity, about 30 minutes a day, most days of the week, trying to incorporate some strength training. And why is this important? Well, this is important overall for your cardiovascular health, but also for your emotional well-being. So exercise has been demonstrated to improve quality of life, to decrease fatigue, and potentially minimize anxiety and depression. And so I encourage you to think about the activities that you can engage in if you're not currently exercising, to build into activity. And so start with 10 minutes a day and build from there, or start every other day and build from there. And, you know, equally important, so many of us spend hours of our day on Zoom or sedentary, so really trying to think about opportunities for movement and not being sedentary, whether that means trying to stand at your desk, trying to move in between meetings. You know, one of the things that I always encourage people to do is just put on some music, and dance or move purposely around your house. It's fun. It's good for your spirit, and most people enjoy it. But really trying to think about the types of activities that make you feel good, but with some purpose can also improve your physical functioning and potentially your clinical outcomes. And one of the other things that I've been asked to talk about today is how do you optimize your care? And so how do you think about your visits with your provider and how to get the most out of them? And so what I always tell patients is that your team, so not just your doctor, but your entire team, whether it be your nurse, your PA, even the people who check you in at the front desk, we work in hospitals and do care because we want people to have a good experience. And so your how things are going, how you're feeling, and the circumstances of your life are very important to your providers because it allows us to appreciate your whole self and the totality of things that are affecting our ability to give you optimal care. And so with that in mind, as you come into clinic, it's often helpful to bring some notes with you so that you remember the things that have been going on since your last visit, keeping track of them potentially within, you know, a notepad in your phone, so that when that moment comes and you have that time with your provider, you don't forget and you have it right there on hand. So that you can go through some of the symptoms or questions that may have built up over the time since your last visit. We all now have access to our medical records through OpenChart and other types of sources like that. And, you know, the best way to address those with your team is to, you know, review those records that you have and bring with you those specific questions. You know, if there's something that is high urgency, typically you will hear from your team. But if you have questions about reports that come back, that appointment is really your time to discuss them. It's also, if you can, good to have someone come with you. A second set of ears can be helpful and also may be great for just prompting recollection of symptoms or concerns that you may have had in the intervening time. I think the bottom line in all of this is that your wellness is critical to your providers and your team, and communication will only make your care that much better. So that concludes my comments for today. And again, thank you for allowing me this time.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. O'Donnell. That was just a wonderful presentation. And again, such helpful and practical tips on physical activity and its importance and guidelines for communication. So thank you so very much. And our next speaker is Ms. Diana Bearden. And Ms. Bearden is an oncology dietitian with the Michael E. DeBakey VA Medical Center, and Ms. Bearden will be addressing nutrition, hydration concerns, and tips. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Bearden.
Thank you so much, Carolyn. I'm excited to be part of today's presentation. So nutrition and hydration are key, not only to the tolerance, your tolerance to treatment, but also to provide you the energy to do the things that you enjoy, as well as nourishing your body to do basic functions. Food is functional and provides our body nutrients to function optimally. So it's essential to life. Recommendations really focus on a plant-based diet. They call it a lot of different things like the Mediterranean diet and a whole bunch of different things, but basically it's a plant-based diet. And it is what's recommended for prevention during treatment and survivorship. Now, a good way to identify our best forms of plant-based foods include things like, does it look like it did when it was harvested, when it was picked from the tree or pulled out of the ground or plucked off the bush? A plant-based diet also is really good with energy balance, so it can be helpful in maintaining a healthy weight and reaching your weight goals if indeed you're looking to gain or lose weight. If your goals include weight loss, like you're trying to lose weight, some general guidelines are things like using about a 9-inch plate when you're eating. Plate sizes have grown over the last several decades, and what we're served on is not necessarily an appropriate plate size when we're looking at what we need to nourish our body. So covering about two-thirds of your plate with a plant-based food, such as a whole grain, fruits, vegetables, nuts, and seeds are what we want to focus on. Imagery oftentimes helps, and so if you have a plate and you're doing about two-thirds of it, then you know that you're kind of getting that variety. Now, plant-based food provide antioxidants, phytochemicals, polyphenols, and fiber. There's a bunch of names of each in one of those categories, but the bottom line is you can only get these things from plant-based foods, okay? They don't come from any other types of options. So fresh and frozen are the best forms of plant-based foods. Now, incorporating a variety of colors is what we want to do, and the colors actually tell us the type of nutrients that are abundant in the food. We want rich colors, and I always recommend to patients frozen. It's economically friendly, and it doesn't bust your pocketbook. You know, buying a whole head of broccoli may not be the best thing for every person, depending on their lifestyle. And you may not want to eat broccoli every day for 5 days. And so you don't want to waste food. This often is great for people who are living with families because, you know, preferences and things like that can also come into place. And so oftentimes, our fresh options have to travel from a far distance, requiring them to be harvested quite early. The taste is impacted by this. That's why a lot of times you'll hear patients, I'll hear patients say, the food just doesn't taste as good as it used to, and I don't know why. And a lot of it's because some of it comes from, you know, thousands of miles away, and they have to harvest it soon enough so when it gets here, it's ready for consumption. So when we're talking about grains, another plant-based item, the best way I can kind of guide patients with this when you're in the grocery store, which labels can be very deceiving and misleading, is by looking at the cook time with your rice, with your grains, any type of oat. You want to look for the one that takes the longest to cook. When a food's cook time is reduced, it means it's been heavily processed. When a food goes through processing, it strips the food of the nutrients that was initially in the food. And they do that because most of the nutrients, if not all of them, are attached to the fiber. And there's two types of fiber in our plant-based foods, soluble and insoluble. Soluble is like if you had a piece of bread and you added some water to it, it would kind of dough up. But if you put it in a bucket of water and you came back 3 days later, it'd be completely dissolved. Insoluble fiber is typically found in things like our broccoli, our crunchy veggies, carrots, and cauliflower. You could put that in a pot of water, come back 3 days later, it'll still look like it did when you dropped it off. So that type of fiber is holding on to nutrients. Soluble fiber, like in the bread, kind of helps with our digestive tract, and that kind of fiber is also found, and it's the main ingredient in Metamucil. So it helps with bowel regularity. Fiber has function in our body. We don't really get nutrients from the fiber itself, but the nutrients are attached to the fiber, if that makes sense. And so the more a company has processed the food, they've stripped it. And what they do is they fortify a food. And this became very popular in the 40s and 50s and 60s when we had a lot of cereals and things like that. But what we know is that these fortified vitamins and minerals come from a lab, and our bodies don't respond the same way they do from the food themselves. So it's a suboptimal way for us to get our nutrition. Oftentimes I'm asked about teas and things like that, and teas are great. You do need to steep the tea for about 10 minutes to really get the nutrients from the tea. Bottled options that are at the grocery store do not provide the same level of benefit. Now, the other third of your plate is going to come from a protein source. And a protein is important because it's the building block for our cells and our tissue. So this is very, very important, especially if you're exercising, you're breaking tissue down and you're building it back up. Now, when we look at food, like I mentioned earlier, it's functional. So when we talk about protein, we have to think of the function of the food. And so we do talk about the tissue development, but there's also a component in our wild-caught fish, which we heard earlier, Dr. Galwin about the healthy fats. Now, in our cold water fish, wild-caught cold water fish, be careful not to do farm-raised. It's a suboptimal option, and it doesn't provide the same nutrients, is an ingredient called omega-3. It's in a form called DHA and EPA, and our omega-3s help reduce inflammation. It's our anti-inflammatory component in the diet that is one of our strongest advocates for us in our health. About 3 ounces of cold water fish provides about a gram of DHA and EPA. Now, you might hear sometimes people saying, well, healthy fats are also in our plant-based foods, and they are. They're in our nuts. They're in our all of our plant-based foods, actually. But they're in a different form called alpha-linolenic acid, also seen as ALA. And it's sort of a less optimal form of healthy fat and of omega-3. I kind of compare it to the peso and the dollar. It takes lots of pesos, and the alpha-linolenic is like the peso, lots and lots of pesos to equal $1. So you have to eat a whole bunch of them in order to get that benefit. And oftentimes when you're looking at weight loss, that's not necessarily the right thing. So sometimes nuts, seeds, and fats can be a little challenging when you're looking at that. So I always encourage patients to use their cold water fish as their source of DHA and EPA. Now, other suggestions of protein include things like lean poultry and beans, just to provide, with beans occasionally, beans, peas, and lentils, to provide just an entirely plant-based meal, which is really recommended a couple of times a week. If you're using seasonings, you want to use its whole form. You can get them in fresh, frozen, and dried. You don't want things that are made up with a lot of chemicals and components in it, but using them in their whole form is how you're going to best benefit. Now, if you're having trouble with weight and you're losing a lot of weight, oftentimes there are some things that you can do to help with you optimizing in your intake. One of the things is when your appetite's not great, hot and very aromatic foods can be discouraging. And a decreased appetite can often, you know, be in the presence of someone who is struggling with eating. By providing calorically dense options in small portions several times throughout the day can be very, very helpful. The smell of food actually activates our senses and almost feels like we've eaten food already. And so that's one of the reasons we want to focus on reducing that. So cold options, cottage cheese and yogurt and some salads that are in a cold form. Even our protein, making tuna salad or salmon salad would be an option for that. So you can kind of have a balanced option. A balanced meal. Now, there are some things I get questions about. Supplements and herbals are discouraged for prevention of and during treatment. You need to run these options by your doctor. There isn't any verification on our herbals and supplements by the FDA or USDA, so you really don't know if what's on the label is in the bottle. And this can be sometimes an issue in interacting with medications you're taking and putting you at risk of some things that may not normally be in your plan without this option being in your diet. I want to recommend a couple of options for you. I really like the American Institute for Cancer Research, the AICR. They have a great free cookbook online, and they have really good ways for implementing guidelines into your life and your family's life. It's hard to make lifelong changes alone, so having the support of your family and everybody bringing these recommendations into place are very important. These recommendations are actually across the board for most comorbidities because the function of the food is reducing inflammation, and we know inflammation is the core of many of our comorbidities. Hydration is always important. You need about 8 to 10 8-ounce glasses of fluid per day, and fluids that are hydrating are water, juice, milk, and non-caffeinated versions of teas and coffees. In closing, a dietitian can provide you with information about your unique needs and what you're going through and help customize meal options and diets for you to help you be most successful. In closing, I'm going to just encourage you to know your healthcare team and how to contact them. And I'm going to hand the line back over to Carolyn.
Oh, thank you so much, Ms. Bearden. That was just a wonderful presentation. Stellar, and lots of incredible information for our participants to have. And I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A, so thank you. Thank you so much. I'm just going to say a few words about Cancer Care's free programs and services, and then we're going to move right into the we'll move shortly into the Q&A. So Cancer Care is a national nonprofit organization that provides free programs and services for people throughout the United States. And what are those services? So we do have a hope line, 1-800-813-4673, and a website, www.cancercare.org. Many people call our hope line, which is staffed by our 40 MSW oncology social workers. And they will answer a number of your questions when you call. So many people will call initially. First they'll call, they may call for help with transportation for treatment or co-payment assistance, or they may ask for counseling services or to join an online support group. So these are some of the services that CancerCare offers, and we, our social workers, can go over that with them. But we also offer other services as well. We also have a team of people that provide resource navigation. So that means if we don't have the resource that you need, they will provide it. And we also offer these workshops, about 80 per year, and we also offer publications and also fact sheets. And you can visit our website to learn more about all of the services that we offer. There's quite a large number, and we help people of all ages and with all types of cancers, including MPNs. We have online support groups for people with every type of cancer and with for both older adults, younger adults, middle-aged adults, caregivers, spouses, partners. So everyone, there's a group for everybody. And now we're going to move on to the Q&A, and I'm going to ask Krista to explain to you how to queue up for questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will take questions from the web only. You may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question.
And this is for Dr. Gowan. Do you have any recommendations for yoga at home? How much time should I dedicate if I'm just getting started?
Yeah, well, I think there's a lot of different resources out there. And so certainly, you know, there's home videos, YouTube, there's online platforms. In fact, the clinical trial that we performed was through a platform called Udaya that had dedicated MPN focus videos that were modifications for splenomegaly. So I think there's a lot of resources out there, but I think there's also something very special in the community feel of actually going to a yoga studio. And so I would encourage you to look around, look even within if you're near a large academic cancer institution. Often there are yoga classes given from the cancer center itself. And so as far as the dose, and so I would say let your body be your guide. Everyone's starting from a different space, right? And so don't overdo it. If you're in a class and it feels like too much, sit down, breathe, and do some more mindfulness kind of practice. And I will say that with a very small amount of dose, meaning small amount of time and frequency, benefits can be observed. And so in one trial, I saw as little as 10 minutes a week could even have some impact in symptoms and inflammation. So whatever you can do, you know, some folks do as much as 3 to 5 hours a week. So start slow, listen to your body, engage the community. And I think those are probably the best strategies moving forward.
Excellent. Thank you. And for Ms. Bearden, are there any foods that I should avoid while on treatment?
There aren't any foods to avoid, but when we're talking about optimally, you know, feeding ourselves and we're looking at the function of food and how it's going to benefit us, the things that I reviewed are what you want to focus on. If you're eating things that are overly processed, have a lot of preservatives in them, you know, the foods been exposed to modification typically, and a lot of the chemicals that are used for preservatives aren't necessarily optimal for your health is probably the best way to say it. So, you know, making it simple, there are some you know, especially people with busy lifestyles. There's a lot of food services out there now, like HelloFresh, and just all kinds of ways you can order food if you're having trouble with time management. There's a lot of other meal services where they focus on the whole food approach, and a lot of specific diet recommendations. There's another one called Mom's Meals, and there's, you know, they do things for renal patients with kidney problems, patients with diabetes, so it can help if you're, you know, having a busy lifestyle and you're trying to kind of emulate, you know, the best you can with fitting in those whole foods. But the best way to do it is keep it simple. Eat the food in its whole form. You don't have to do anything fancy, no fancy recipes. It can just be very simple and straightforward. And that's really what I would recommend.
And for Dr. Gowan, are there any clinical trials examining integrative medicine for oncology patients?
Oh my goodness, yes. And as I described in the earlier conversation, is how do we define integrative medicine, right? And there's so many buckets. And so it's lifestyle, it's mindfulness, it's gratitude exercises, it's acupuncture and massage. I mean, there's so many modalities out there. I could go on and list 90 plus different integrative medicine modalities. So yes, many, many, many ongoing clinical trials. I think the most robust are within our solid tumor types, such as breast, prostate, and within the hematologic space, it's just starting to grow, and we really need more data. And so that is happening. We are starting to particularly look at some dietary interventions, certainly mindfulness interventions in the hematologic space. For MPNs in particular, we're looking at the impact of the Mediterranean diet. That's Angela Fleshman's work out of UC Irvine. We're looking at the impact of meditation and working with Calm, and Jennifer Huberty and Ruben Massa are working through that. And so lots of exercise interventions and things also at different kind of places around the world. So much more to come, but my goodness, it is certainly an area of hot research.
And a question actually for both Dr. Gowan and for Ms. Bearden, what about protein shakes to gain weight or lose weight? Are there any free resources to get the shakes?
Using a whole foods approach is really kind of a very economical way to do it and a way to personalize it. A dietitian can help you with like personalizing, you know, recipes for that. There are recipes online. There are a lot of products out there, but like I kind of mentioned earlier, you know, not all products are necessarily regulated by an organization to protect you as a consumer with what's on the label. There are some things out there, but I just encourage people from an economic standpoint, from a preference standpoint, to make it at home. Use, you know, yogurt and whatever kind of milk you like, almond milk, regular milk, put fruits and veggies in there and just create it on your own and think about the plate that I talked about and maybe emulating something similar to that in a shake. But there are several free resources for recipes on the internet, but not so much for providing a shake that I'm aware of.
I love that answer, and I was going to echo exactly the same as make it at home, because if you read many of the ingredients on these processed protein shakes, many of them you cannot pronounce. And so again, getting back to the idea of eat things you recognize, eat whole foods. And so I love the recommendations you made, and I think I would add just a couple that I use is I think it can be hard, particularly if you're living alone, is to make shakes all the time. And so one strategy is to make one batch, and I like things like the Vitamix, where you're getting all of the fiber mixed in through whole fruits and veggies, but making a big batch and then freezing them in small little aliquots into the little popsicles that we used to do for our children. And you can keep that in the freezer, and it's so easy to grab and snack on those throughout the day and keep them throughout the week. And so that's one of the little kind of tricks that some patients really find useful.
Oh, fantastic. This has been an amazing program. I must say that this has been very unique. We have wonderful speakers, wonderful questions that people have asked, and just fantastic. I'm going to ask our speakers, both Dr. Gowan and Ms. Bearden, to provide just a takeaway, just a minute and a half takeaway that you'd like people to take away from today's program as we are about to conclude the program. So I'll start with Dr. Gowan.
Well, I just want to again say thank you, everyone, for participating today and to congratulate you for your advocacy and to, again, realize this kind of medicine is putting you in the driver's seat. And so it is a huge honor to have the power to empower your care, but also responsibility, right? It takes work to do all of these things, but it's good work, and it certainly is. It gives you much, much more payoff. And so remembering the four pillars, care of the body, mind, connection, and joy, trying to nurture all of those pillars throughout the day, and to recognize, too, how critically important these conversations are with your healthcare team for both weight loss and weight gain, really saying, yes, this is important and we need to address this, and how do I do that in the most safe, evidence-based, but also fun and engaging way. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And Ms. Bearden.
Yeah, I want to just, remind people, it doesn't cost a lot to eat healthy. It's about understanding the choices that you want to make and understand the function of the food. I didn't say this earlier, but, even canned fish is equitably healthy for you and nourishing as fresh. Sometimes people feel like the financial boundaries limit them, and there is no boundary when it comes to eating healthy. There's all kinds of ways to make it fit at all economic levels. And also, don't beat yourself up. Years and years of eating we've been going through, and our body is very resilient. I don't want you to shame yourself or feel like, oh gosh, I fell off, the plan. Or it's not about that. It's about making the best choices you can the majority of the time and the best way you can do it. There's a lot of things that go into our overall health, and nutrition is part of that. But like we've heard today, there are many aspects of wellness that we can incorporate in our lifestyle to give us the wellness that we're working towards. So I'll hand it back over to Carolyn.
Well, thank you so much. I want to thank our speakers. I want to thank our participants. Again, this has been a phenomenal call. It's a program we'd like to do again, obviously, because it speaks to some. It puts each of you in the driver's seat to some extent to have things that you can do that are reasonable. But I do want to comment on the fact that there are so many on the call today, and we couldn't take all your questions. So for those of you who asked a question, for those of you who have a question yet to ask, and for those of you who are thinking of a question, please go back to your treating healthcare team, and please ask them the question again. Even if you got an answer today, ask your healthcare team the question, and work with the healthcare team members to really implement what you need to do so that you can begin to utilize some of the information you learned today and in your for your own lifestyle and benefit. Also, for those of you who often want to call your doctor's office, be sure that you know how to reach them weekends, evenings, and holidays. It seems that those are the times when everything seems to happen. During business hours, it's kind of quiet, and then evening, weekends, and holidays, that's when everything becomes a problem of how do I reach somebody. So be sure that you know how to reach your healthcare team. Again, I want to thank you all for your participation today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop, and you may now disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.